It's like a group of people sitting back there in the high-priced seats. Pretty soon you'll find out that this is not a contagious illness. And you'll come up and join us, you know, and be part of the meeting. But until then, stay back there in what we prefer to call the venereal disease section. Last week I talked a little bit on the first three steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I tried, you know, to explain them in language that's very simple, because I'm a simple guy, and that maybe you would understand it as I did. And today I want to continue on, and I want to go on to the fourth, fifth, and sixth steps. But for those of you who have arrived since then, quickly, you know, the first three steps were nothing more than admitting that we had a problem, recognizing that we had a problem, and making some sort of a decision perhaps to do something about it. And the thing that we were suggested to do about it is a culmination of the experiences of the founding members of Alcoholics Anonymous, who were people just like you and I. Unfortunately, many people who are new to AA sort of think that this program was derived out of some great big educational process someplace, you know, the University of Alcoholics Anonymous or something like that, with big scholars and leading clerics and people like that putting together this set of directions for you and I. But as I pointed out, you know, by using the example of Willie Mays, you know, if you got a problem, you better go right to the horse's mouth, you know. If you have a problem with plumbing, don't call up an electrician, you know, call up a plumber. And the same thing holds true, I believe, that if you've got a drinking problem, your best source of help would be to find somebody who also has had a drinking problem and apparently, as of today, has done something successfully about it. The only group of people that I really know that meet on a regular, continuing, weekly basis or daily basis are these groups called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know, as we talked about last week, that sometimes it's difficult to accept that fact. There's a stigma attached to the word alcoholic that people don't really enjoy identifying themselves as. The cemeteries are full of people who actually chose rather to die than to identify themselves as an alcoholic. I'm not qualified to diagnose anybody's illness, but I, you know, we always say in AA, you know, if you talk like a duck and you eat like a duck and you quack like a duck and you lay eggs, chances are pretty goddamn good you're a duck, you know. And it's the same thing with alcoholics. And I have actually seen people sit right here at these tables, you know, and deny vehemently, you know, that they had any kind of a drinking problem and were dead 30, 60, 90 days later, you know, as a result of their illness. Not as a result of pneumonia or cancer or polio or anything like that. Death the way alcoholics die, you know, in seizures, convulsions, delirium tremors or whatever. And that was the same kind of an attitude that the people who founded this program had. So don't think you're unique or you're different or you're not like these people. Because 52 years ago when they wrote this book, and you were the kind of people that wrote the book, they said in the opening sentence, I believe, of the third chapter or the fifth chapter, one of them says, none of us was willing to admit that we were real alcoholics because no one likes to think that he or she is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. So it's almost a natural form of denial to not want to be an alcoholic. But due to my great wealth of education and my expertise, I came upon a thing that you saw on the videotape here the other day when I was screwing around with that president of that Ivy League university, and I know it wasn't an original thought of mine, that God, as I understand, had to put that thought in my mind, because I certainly am not capable of originating anything like that. But I walked up to that intelligent son of a bitch, you know, and I told him, did it ever dawn on you? And I say this to any of you who are full of denial and who are new here now. If you don't like the word alcoholic, you don't have to be an alcoholic to quit drinking. You don't have to be a drug addict to quit taking drugs. It all goes down to what I keep pounding or trying to pound into people's heads, you know, that there is an answer to this problem that's so simple that it makes me nervous to think about it. And that's just use your common sense. And everybody in this room is equipped with common sense. There are no idiots, no retarded, dumb people in here. Even if they were, as this book says, they too could recover. Because it says right that in the book, there are people who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. But they too can recover if they have the capacity to be honest. And honesty is nothing more than using your own common sense. That's all the hell it is. I repeat it over and over again, but it's always for the benefit of new people on a weekly basis. Everybody in this room is identified as having a chemical problem of some sort. Yet there's nobody in this room right now who would attest to the fact that it is better for them when they use whatever the chemical of their choice is. Is there anybody here who says life is better when you drink? Life is better when you jam shit up your nose? Life is better when you're sticking needles in your arms, smoking funny little cigarettes, eating pocket rockets? Is things really better then? All right. Then how come at least half of us in this room are going to go back and use again? And it's always scary to me when I make that remark. You know what's scary? And maybe when you're really new to this program or this way of life, you don't attach the fear to it that I have. People who, if I ever make a decision to drink again, I'm going to make that decision when I'm sober. Any of you in this room that decides to drink or use again is going to make that decision when you got all of your senses. Holy Christ! That certainly proves to me what it says in the book. Alcohol. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. And if you don't think it's cunning, how come then none of you said life is better when I drink and use? And yet you know you're going to use again. That's how cunning it is. I've often said in my own experiences that the last year of my drinking career, I really believe this, the last year, which I probably drank more that year than all of the other years put together, but that whole last year never did I take a drink that I really wanted. I was just as scared to stop. I didn't have the courage to face the possibility that I wouldn't have that crutch anymore. And I was just as scared to stop. I thought that if I stopped drinking, I'd go into DTs. If I stopped drinking, I'd have a convulsion. If I stopped drinking, I'd have a seizure. If I stopped drinking, you'd find out who I really was. If I stopped drinking, I wouldn't be able to bullshit and con and shoot angles and be hip, slick, and cool, and Cape Pasta, and all that bullshit, you know. I wouldn't have that big shield of alcohol in front of me. Because that's what alcohol was for me. It was a big shield. So you couldn't see who I really was. You know, if I had that shield up, I'd tell you I was a big munitions dealer from the East, the Far East, or the Middle East. Not rifles, you know, amphibious tanks or some shit like that. Always something big, you know. Or I was the... I'll never forget once a guy says to me in a saloon, he says, "Yeah, you look like Leo DeRocha," who used to be the manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers. I said, "Yeah." The next day I was in a hotel in Chicago. I'm sitting at the bar and I walked out to the lobby and I give the goddamn bellhop $3, which was a lot of money in those days, you know. I says, "Now wait 10 minutes. When I go back in the bar, then you come in with your little goddamn plate and this envelope, and I give him a blank envelope, and you start calling for Mr. Leo DeRocha." And I'm sitting there at the goddamn bar, and I played the whole thing, you know, figuring everybody could say, "Jesus Christ, that's Leo DeRocha." Bartender blew it right off the bat. I picked up the envelope, you know, and dipped the kid again, you know, "Mr. Leo DeRocha." Guy, "Hey, you ain't Leo DeRocha. What kind of shit you trying to do?" And that's how it was. And then AA, or abstinence, we'll say, makes me put the shield down. Makes me put the shield down. And then here I am. This is me. And that's sort of what the fourth step of this program is all about. You know, I told you how simple the first three steps were last week, you know, where you throw up and you think you're going to die, and you're calling out for, oh, Jesus Christ, help me. I'm going to hell. I'll do anything to get off of this. Good God, I'm going crazy. That's steps 1, 2, and 3 of alcoholics. But the fourth step, traditionally told throughout AA, as perhaps the most difficult of our steps. I don't really agree with that. But most people say that the fourth step is the most difficult. I can see why, in a way, because the fourth step is actually the first time you have to do something sober. And it's rather unpleasant. You see, the first three steps, you're getting well. You're getting over the throwing up, the headache, and all of that bullshit. And they sort of call it the honeymoon, you know, and you're beginning to eat, and you like it. Now, to continue that, then you've got to go on through them steps, 4, 5, and 6. And the fourth one, the way I usually say it around here, is rather cruel, but I've never been known to have too much tact anyhow, you know. If you don't think you need help, answer this question only to yourself. And if you're going to answer it only to yourself, there's no sense in being dishonest about it. Because if you're dishonest about it, then you're really sick. You're really sick. And only you really know the truth of what's really going on in your life. Only you know how your marriage situations are, your job situations, your relationships, your life in general, your debts, your concern for your family, your relationships with your children. Only you really know the truth about that. So think for a minute. Can you accept this? That where you are in life right now is a direct result of your best effort. That's the truth. Where you are right now is the result of your best efforts. This is where all of your knowledge, all of your hips slick and cool, all of your wealth of friends, huge amounts of resources, doing it your way. This is where it's got you. Now, I want to remind you where you are, just so that you don't have any misconceptions about that. Although, thank God, at least you're here. At least I assume you're making an attempt to try to remedy this situation. But in case you don't know where you are in life right now, I'll tell you. You are the ward, W-A-R-D, a voluntary ward to an uneducated, fat, bald-headed, blood-selling wino. That's exactly what you are. I'm going to tell you what time to eat. I'm going to tell you when to eat, what to eat, when to go to bed, when to get up. In other words, I'm running your life. And I never wanted that. And I'm quite sure you never wanted that. And either did a God or a power, whatever the heck you want to call it, ever want that. You and I and everybody who walks the face of this earth has a God-given right to a way of life, an individual way of life, a life of choice, especially in this country. And it was never programmed to make you the ward of anybody. To become the ward of somebody means that you're either mentally ill, or you're incapacitated in some way, or you've been involved in criminal activity. Then you become the ward of people. But none of you fall into those categories. You are sane, lovable, personable people with ambition, people with qualifications, people who can do things, contribute, be part of, and yet you got a fat, bald-headed asshole like me running your life. But again, as long as you're trying to rectify that situation, then maybe for now it's good that I'm helping you run your life. And that's really what we're doing here. Now, the fourth step of this program says we made a searching, fearless, moral inventory of ourselves. Now, why do you do that? It's rather simple. rather simple if you take time to figure it out. You were driving down the freeway in your car, and all of a sudden it stopped. You wouldn't just sit in the car figuring in time it'll get well. Or maybe 5 minutes from now it'll start again. You would have to try to discover the exact nature of the wrongs. And if those words are familiar, they're contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Most people would get out of the car and lift up the hood to see if they could find out what the hell is keeping the car from going. And then once they discovered what the hell was wrong, maybe an ignition wire came off, maybe the distributor cap was loose, battery cable came off, it might not be a big, big deal. And then you'd know what you have to fix. Maybe the fan belt come off. So you say, well, shit, I need a new fan belt. And you'd probably run off to a gas station, a service station, a garage, a place, get a fan belt, and you'd fix it. That's all you do here once you recognize through that first step, I have a problem with alcohol. I'm going to lift up the hood now. Why do I have this problem? Why do I drink like this? Why can't I accept the fact that when I drink, it's not pleasant anymore? Is that true? Or isn't it true? You're all fun lovers, right? All good time, Charlie's, let's party! When was the last time you had fun drinking? When was the last time you had fun putting a needle in your arm or jamming some shit up your nose or whatever? When was the last time you woke up and said, Jesus Christ, am I glad we got wasted last night? Well, it's great, I lost my job again. When was the last time something positive was a result of your drinking? When was the last time you actually succeeded in getting what you thought the drinking was going to give you? Let's go out, have a few drinks, and feel good. When's the last time that happened? Or are you falling into that category that alcoholics fall into, where we seem to always wind up with the opposite of what we expect the alcohol to give us? I want to be loved, so I'm going to have a couple of drinks so I'm lovable. And I wind up being hated and detested and unwanted. I feel like hell, my God, I'm going to have a couple of drinks to perk up. And I have a couple of drinks and I'm sicker than I was before I started to drink. I'm sad. Things are bad. My dog got run over. I'm going to have a couple of drinks to kill the sadness. I want to be happy. And I wind up crying all goddamn day long for somebody else's dog. And I know that has happened to you because you're giggling, and that's the sign of identification. You know exactly what I'm talking about. You know exactly what I'm talking about. So I look at this step and I say, well, there is something wrong with my car. But I don't throw the car away. The car isn't all bad. The tires are still good. Motor's still good, the seats are still good, light's still good. I got a lot of good things in this car, just like there's a lot of good things in you. For God's sake, don't crucify yourself when you take this step. We haven't been really that bad. Compare us against whatever. We're really not that bad. Think of the alternatives. What else you might have been. And in some of our cases, should have been, if we were caught. I read an interesting piece in a paper here, the day before yesterday. It says the average person who gets arrested for drunk driving, now believe this, has done it 217 times before being caught. Wow. But I know it's true. I know it's true. And I just think, my God, if I had gotten 502, every time I should have got one, man, they would have locked me and you up together and really threw that key away, right? They would have brought back them Civil War caves out there in Arizona. Put us out there chopping rocks with the Apaches guarding us, you know. Well, would have happened because there'd be no sense in letting people like us out in society. Murderers. That's the only name that I have for a drunk driver. Made a searching, fearless, moral inventory. Now, as soon as we hear that word moral, a lot of people think that means we're going to start talking about sex. It hasn't got nothing to do with sex. Moral means good or bad. Good or bad. The things that are good in my life, the things that are bad in my life. I know some of you here are merchants. What does every merchant do the first of the year? He looks at his inventory. Looks at what the hell he's getting rid of, what he's selling, what's helping him. And he gets more of it. And then he looks and sees what isn't helping him and he gets rid of it. That's all you and I have to do. Makes common sense. Makes common sense. Then that fifth step. People, Jesus, I can't do that. Admitted to God. To ourselves. And to another human being. The exact nature of our wrongs. Now, why would we do that? Why would we? First off, I caution those of you who might live under an illusion, especially if you're of the Catholic faith, that you can take that step in the confessional. You can't. In the confessional, the priest represents God. So if you were trying to include that as your fifth step, what you would be doing would be admitting to God and admitting to God again and to ourselves. Only two people. Only two people. You certainly can take it with a member of the clergy outside of the confessional, in an office, in the rectory, or wherever, or anything like that. This admitting to God, of course, is our acceptance of a power. That there is a power greater than ourselves. As I showed you with the light there the other day. That light is fine as long as it's connected to the power. There is some use to it. But if I went over there and turned the switch and disconnected it from the power, it'd just be another useless thing on a wall full of useless things. Connected to the power, a belief, that's all that we suggest is that you believe, you know, believe. Come to believe. And by golly, the options are there. God as you understand him, not as Gene D understands him, not as Marsh understands him, or the Catholics understand him, or the Lutherans understand him, or the Eskimos understand him, or the Shawnees, the Pico, or the whatever. As you understand him. And to ourselves, of course, you've done that already in the first step. Admitted that I was powerless over alcohol. And then I choose to believe the reason that they suggest that you go to another person. It's because it helps you get it all out on the table, and that has always been the answer for any problem. Get it out in the open so you can sort it out and work on it. You know, you don't do jigsaw puzzles in your pocket. You get all the pieces out on the table at once, don't you? You don't just take a handful of the puzzle and work on that until you use up all of them. And then go get another handful. You get it all out there. All out there. So you can sort them out and find out what you need and what you don't need. And you do this by sharing this experience with another person. And then there are some side benefits to that. Because of our sadistic nature of wanting to punish ourselves and for really thinking that we really are a bunch of scumheads, we make a startling discovery that when we share some of these deep, dark, horrible secrets of our lives, that other people sort of snicker and smile. Say, shit, is that all you did? Hell, I've done that 15 times. You what? You're 62 years old, you masturbated? My father's still doing it, he's 83. Sounds silly, but, you know, that's the kind of things that happen. I always tell a little funny in AA about that, about a guy who, you know, called up his sponsor and said he was going to take a drink. But he didn't. The sponsor says, well, how come you didn't take the drink? He says, why did you want a drink? He says, well, as I got fired from my job today. The sponsor says, oh. He says, well, I didn't even get my vacation pay. The sponsor says, huh. He says, but when I got home, he says, I found my wife in bed with my boss. He says, I went in the closet and got my gun. Huh? He says, and I shot him. I killed him. Yeah? Did you take a drink? No. Good. That's about really what it is. And I'm always amazed at alcoholics who say, oh, I can't tell that story to anybody. I can't tell anybody about me. And shit, half of the bartenders in Daly City know your story. Or wherever the hell you drink, up there in Manteca, Garberville, or Fresno, you've told your story over and over again. As a matter of fact, you've told it so much, You have people saying, for Christ's sake, why don't you shut up? But we like to talk, don't we, us? When we're drinking, God damn, yes, we love to talk. I'll never forget a time in a place called South Beloit, Illinois, right up on the Wisconsin-Illinois border. I went into a saloon one day. You know, we're so goddamn intelligent, right, when we're drunk, you know, and drinking and know-it-alls and... And I was the only guy in the bar. It was early in the morning. Big, long bar, longer than this room. The bartender was down at the other end figuring out the scratch sheet for the races. And I'm way the hell up here. So every time I ordered a drink, he had to walk a long way and pour the goddamn drink. Then he'd go back and work on his paper. And I had nobody to talk to. And I was lonely. And nobody knew how smart I was. So when he poured about the fourth drink, I said, stay up here. I want to talk to you. He said, what the hell do you want to talk about? I said, nuclear fission. He said, what? I said, nuclear fission. And he pulled up a little stool. He says, first I want to ask you a couple of questions. Is you from around here? I said, yeah. He said, well, you know this agricultural country? Yeah. He said, you know about agriculture? And I said, yeah. He said, you ever see cow shit? I said, yeah. He said, you know, big clumps like that, right? He said, big blah. Yeah, that's right. He said, you ever see chicken shit? Little white specks all over the place? I said, yeah, that's right. He said, how about rabbit shit? I said, yeah, little tiny round black balls. He said, horse shit? I said, yeah, big brown ball, destroyed. Yeah, he says, tell me something. Is there's four animals and they all eat the same thing. He says, how come they shit different? I said, Jesus, I don't know. He says, you don't even know from shit. You want to talk to me about nuclear fission? how we are. That's how we are. But that sixth step is the step we all really want. But maybe we don't. Maybe we don't. I think this the sixth step is probably the first step that tests our sincerity. It's sort of a commitment step. Let me read it to you. We are entirely ready to have God remove all of these defects of character. Really? No more screwing around, no more this, no more that, no more shooting angles, no more selling cars with bad clutches, no more drinking. Think about that for a minute. Roll that around in your head. It's very important. Do you really want to stop drinking? Or if given the option, would you like to be a social drinker? How many of you would like, really, how many of you would like to be a social drinker instead of an alcoholic? Is that right, all of you? You know what you really want to be, those of you who put up your hand? You want to drink like an alcoholic and suffer like a social drinker. You don't want to be a social drinker. You know how social drinkers drink? Sometimes they don't. Think about that for a minute. They go whole weekends without drinking sometimes. You know what else they do? They leave half of a drink on the bar and go home. Ever hear them talk? Two's my limit. I've had enough. No thanks. Let's eat. They put the caps back on bottles. You really want that? Not if you're an alcoholic, you don't. Two drinks could never do for me what I would demand alcohol to do. And even if I could, what would I have then to handle my anger? What would I have to handle my resentments, my jealousy, my envy, and all of the other character defects that I've got? You know, I've often said if they had a pill that could make you a social drinker, you'd have to get pills for all of the other things, too. You could run around with a big box full of pills, you know. Every time I got mad, every time I got everything, feel good, feel bad, taking pills all the time. You know. Entirely ready. I've told this many times, but I'll tell it again because it's important. It's important. Why do you come to AA? People say to me, well, Jesus Christ, you know, you were here for 6 years drunk. The hell was so different at the end of them 6 years that? But finally, you know, apparently you wanted this sobriety. What was different? Well, I'll tell you what it was. I began to get some common sense. You know, you can't deny what you see with your own eyes. If you do that, this program is no help for you, I'll tell you that. But when you see something right before your eyes that takes place and changes, you know, to deny it is pretty sick. I began to see people who came into this program the same time I did. Only they didn't return to drinking or using. They began to live this way of life. And it sort of burned me up. And it made me resentful and certainly envious. Not an envy that I would tell you about. But I began to see people putting their lives back together again. I began to see people receiving all the rewards that you do in sobriety, better relationships with the family, job promotions, material gain, self-respect. And then I'd see people sober 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. So pretty soon I had to stop saying that this program don't work. Just like none of you can say that now. I wiped you out at the beginning of this meeting with that. Anybody in here dare say this program don't work? Go over and tell Mary that. I'll go over and tell anybody else in this room who's walking around with sobriety. There's people that are left here less than 6 months ago. Tell them it doesn't work and you're sober here today. Sure, it don't work if you don't want it to work. I guarantee you it's not going to work if you don't want it to work. Some of you are going to go right back in them pits. I know that. I don't know that because of any great expertise. I know that because I've done that. God's sake, don't sit out there and think for 1 minute. I have never sat out in places like that and said the same things mentally that some of you are saying right now. He's all bullshit anyhow. What the hell's that asshole look that he's talking about? You know? I used to sit in the back of the hall of Peoria State Hospital. Them guys from AA come down and give me all that goddamn AA bullshit. And then it dawned on me one day that when the meeting was over, them guys were getting in cars, brand new cars. And they were driving out of that gate. They were going someplace to eat a big lunch. What the hell was I going to do? I was walking across that goddamn compound and standing in line in front of the mess hall with a bunch of dingbats to eat baked macaroni and salmon. With the bones in it. And I thought I knew more than them. I was the bullshit, not them. And I finally came to that realization that, hey, you know, if it is like they say, if you want what we have, well, yeah, I guess I do. But I'm not too sure I want it right now. And that was always the drawback with me. I want what you've got. You all want what we've got. But you're not sure whether you want it right now or not. And, you know, at 24 years old, I wasn't too hip on looking forward to a life of abstinence. How do you get laid if you don't drink? What's the kind of thoughts that went through my mind? What do you do at a baseball game if you don't drink? I thought everybody in the baseball park drank until I asked a beer vendor once. I said, there's 46,000 people here today. You guys must be selling a lot of beer. He said, no, it's a bad day. This crowd ain't drinking too much. Really? I got 11 empties in front of me. I thought we were doing fine. You know? He says, guys like you are no good for me either. I said, what do you mean? I got 11 bottles of beer. He said, yeah, it's only the third inning. You'll probably be thrown out in the next inning. And he was right. Didn't even make it to the next inning. Entirely ready for God to remove these defects of character. Well, that's a decision you got to make. And here's how I made that. I was filling out this form, and I've never been able really to remember what the hell it was. And it said, religion. I'm baptized a Catholic. I went to parochial school. As far as I know, I'm a Catholic. It says that on the baptismal certificate. I've always identified as a Catholic. And I'm neither proud of this or ashamed of this. But I haven't been to Mass, I guess, for 40 years, probably. But I number amongst my very close friends, and I think they do the same, a couple of my seniors. Mark Hurley, who just got transferred over to the Vatican, Archbishop of Archdiocese of Santa Rosa. I've had a private audience, as some of you know, with the Pope Paul, on his 84th birthday. And I stay pretty active with the parochial school system in this area. But I don't go to no church or anything like that. So when I was filling out this form and it said religion, I started to write down Catholic. But then I figured, Jesus, you know, what a bullshitter you are. What are you putting Catholic down for? You don't go to church or nothing like that. According to the rules of the church, I can't receive the sacraments or anything like that. So I erased it. And I put down N.A., non-applicable. But that didn't satisfy me too much. I wanted to be something. I wanted to have an answer if somebody said, well, what religion are you? Now, this is a very common way of thinking after you're sober 4 or 5 years. Well, we talk about it a lot in AA. We say, oh, boy, 4 or 5 years, you begin to get spiritually oriented or religious. They just went out. So I started searching. I went to a lot of different churches, a lot of different rites, ceremonies. Tried to read some of them religious books, but they're tough to read. And I, at that time, sponsored a rabbi of Jewish faith, and I had read an article where Sammy Davis had adopted himself to the Hebrew faith, and I thought, I'm going to try that. Maybe that's where it's at. But I never could really find, you know, whatever the hell I was looking for, and I didn't really know what I was looking for. But none of them made me comfortable until I was watching the Late Show one night about 2 o'clock in the morning. I'll never forget, it was with Frederick March and Elisa Lander, made back in 1930s, about the fall of the Roman Empire and all of that crap. And this one particular scene, you know, it showed them ushering all of the Christians out of the caves underneath the Colosseum out into the arena with the lions and all of that. And Frederick March was standing up there with a big stick in his hand, you know. He said, to the arena with the Christians. Christians. Nice sounding word. I like that word. It's a nice sound. It's got a purity about it, a cleanliness about it. And I thought for a minute, what religion is Christian? I never see any churches, you know, Saint Christian or I never heard anybody say that they go to Our Lady of Christian or who are Christians? So I looked it up in the dictionary, you know, and it said Christians. Good and decent persons. See spiritual. And I thumbed through to look at spiritual. And it said good and decent. See Christian. Good and decent. That's what I wanted to be. That's what you want to be. That's what everybody who's ever come to any kind of a self-improvement program in the world has wanted to be. Better and decent. That's all. I wanted to be a good father. I wanted to be a good husband. A good employee, a good friend. I didn't want to be that scumhead that I had become. And I made a startling discovery as a result of taking this inventory that I didn't really know how to be decent. I had swam around in that sewer for so goddamn long that was all I knew. And that was all I figured everybody else knew. I thought everybody drank. I thought everybody had convulsions. Everybody owed money. Everybody got divorced. Everybody had to suffer and go through all of that pitiful demoralization that's part of the life of the alcoholic. There must be a cleaner sign. There must be a cleaner way. And then I heard it. Somebody said, what is AA? I don't want to hear that, alcoholics. Hold it, though. Let me finish. All right. AA. Alcoholics Anonymous is a program designed for people who seek a new way of life. Oh. Yeah, that's what I want. I want it to be different than it is now. I don't want to be part of this sewer anymore. I want to get out of the sewer. And I want to become a Christian. I want to become good and decent. But I don't know how. What's that you say? Read the first sentence of the fifth chapter of this book. Oh. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. You know how to do it. Is that right? Yeah, I guess you do. I'm looking at you. You look good and decent to me. I do want what you have. What should I do? Here are the steps that we took. What steps? If I do this, I become decent. How do I know? Ask yourself. And I challenge each of you to ask yourself this tonight. Read these steps. Wouldn't you like to know people who lived and subscribed to these principles? Anybody that could subscribe to these would have to be good and decent. But Jesus, I don't think I can do that. You're asking a whole lot for a guy like me. What's that you say? I shouldn't be discouraged because no one amongst us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles? Oh, you mean you make mistakes too sometimes? It's okay to stumble around. I don't have to be a saint. Well, then maybe I'll try. Maybe I have become ready to change my life. Maybe I've looked now and I've accepted the fact that where I have brought me to this point is not what I want. And I'm the one who has brought me here to this point. So maybe you or somebody else could help me get to a different point. Obviously, I cannot do it alone. And I had to admit that to myself, that I was powerless over alcohol, my life had become unmanageable, I had to turn my life and my will over to the care of a power, whatever that power would be, that was greater than me, if I sought to make this change. And that brings you through the first six steps of this program. Any questions or any comments before I close this meeting?